and the wonderful hope he brought to, he still brings to, this world. And of course, there's a lot of hoping of another kind. It's the children hoping that what they ask to be given for Christmas, hoping that it will be under the tree on Christmas morning. You remember that very special something that you longed for, agonized over, wondering if it could really become yours? For me, it was my 10th Christmas, the Christmas I wanted my own new bike. All my friends had new bikes, but my family didn't have quite so much, and my mom and my dad, having gone through the Great Depression, they knew how important it was to watch the money, to be responsible. So for years, I had ridden my brother's old bike. It was used when he got it. Now it was really used. It had dents and scrapes. The red paint was all faded. And what I wanted more than anything that Christmas was a bike that was new and bright and shiny and mine. Well, I asked and I hoped, but I dared not ask or hope too much. You see, I knew that to ask for my own new bike was far more than I should expect. But still silently, secretly, I hoped. A lot. Then the big day came, Christmas morning, and as I rushed to the living room to get a full view of my new bike, it wasn't there. It wasn't there. So I smiled. I thought I'd put on a good face. After all, my parents were kind and generous. I knew that they had done the best they could. But the truth, I was disappointed. So disappointed, I don't even remember what was in one of the presents I opened that morning. Pretty bad. Well, soon enough, all the gift-giving was over, all the presents were open, and there I sat with no bike. Now, I know that it sounds silly and selfish today, but I excused myself, went to the bathroom, locked the door, and cried. Very quietly, I cried. I couldn't let my parents know how disappointed I was. I knew they had surely done their best. Now, we only had one bathroom in our little house, so it didn't take long for somebody to come knocking. Okay, I'm getting out. I wiped the tears from my eyes, threw some water in my face, and ran out of that bathroom with as much enthusiasm as I could, determined to be both happy and content. And when I got to the living room, there stood my family, all standing around my new bike. My new bike! It was beautiful. I ran to it, touched it, hugged my mom and dad, even hugged my brother. I was the happiest little boy in the world. Oh, the joy of hoping and receiving. But now, as an older man, there's something else I remember about that Christmas. My mom had hoped for a nice new coat. And what did she get? Towels. I got a new bike. She got towels. God truly blessed me with wonderful parents who often said yes, but more often said no. Each answer for the same reason. They loved me. And today, there's a lot of hoping in this world, not for bikes or toys or expensive coats, but for safety and security, for peace on earth, for a good job, for a good life. And you know, as I speak with people today all across America, what I'm seeing more and more of is a sense of hopelessness. So many are losing hope. But why? Have things changed that much? Are our circumstances so much harder than prior generations? Or could it be that we are putting our hope in all the wrong things? Interestingly enough, there was another group of people, a nation, in a trouble far more serious than ours today. Today I'll tell you the story of their struggle, their hope, and what happened when a star appeared over their land. A star that led them to the greatest gift ever given. I'll also be telling some other powerful stories of hope. The story of Eric Little, the man who came to be known as the Flying Scotsman, the man we all came to know through the movie Chariots of Fire. But interestingly enough, it's what happened after that Olympics of 1942 that most showed Eric Little's wonderful, hopeful spirit. You'll hear the story of one very sick little girl and a poem her father wrote to bring her hope. Then there's the story of William, a man I knew who had the simple mind of a child, but a spirit of hope that we can all learn from. Finally, you'll hear the story of a blind man who searched for hope in one place and found it, amazingly, somewhere completely different. It's a wonderful program that'll make you remember and laugh and cry and, most of all, give you hope. And speaking of hope, allow me one personal word here. You will never know how much your love and support for my programs inspires me. So often I'll receive a letter, an email, a kind word, all words of encouragement, telling me how you appreciate these programs. A few years ago, after my Christmas program, I received an email from a law officer in Minnesota. He had happened upon my program while on his way to the store on Christmas Day. He told me how he had heard one story, and when he heard that story, it grabbed his heart, brought him to tears, and that story completely changed his family's Christmas celebration that day. What a wonderful inspiration that was to me. Words from the lonely, the sick, the suffering. You think that I'm inspiring you? You'll never know what a great inspiration you are to me. I've surely seen plenty of hardship and difficulty in my life, but God has given me two very special gifts of love. First, the wonderful assurance that no matter how deep in that hole I may find myself, He is there. God is there. To think that someone so big is willing to become so, so small absolutely astounds me. I thank God for His faithfulness. And second, support of others just like you. And this I say with all my heart. Thank you. Thank you for the hope you give me. So, before we get into the program, let's look at a little Christmas trivia. How about this one? Each year at Christmas, over 3 billion Christmas cards are sent just here in the United States alone. And here's one side note about our postal services. From the time our postal service started in 1776 until 1863, all postal services in the United States, all mail, was free. Wow. And get this. Christmas was once illegal in England, and in 1643, in America, the Puritans outlawed all Christmas celebrations. But why, you say? Why did they outlaw Christmas celebrations? Well, they said that Christmas should be a solemn time to reflect on the act of God sending the Christ child, not a time of what they called mad mirth, drunkenness, and foolish celebration. Maybe they weren't so wrong. And speaking of celebrations, if you're planning to go to church or mass after your celebration, are you feeling a little drowsy? Best you hear this one. In some of our original American church services, it was not acceptable to doze off during the sermon. So the pilgrims in Massachusetts devised a special tool sure to keep you awake. They took a long pole, tied to it a length of string, and on the end, a wooden ball. Now, if anyone went to sleep during the sermon, and get this, the sermons could sometimes last as long as 6 to 7 hours. If you fell asleep in the service, a specially appointed leader of the church would hoist the pole up over your head and clop you on the head with that ball. Ouch. And how about this one? When you place your holly wreath on your front door, ever wonder where that idea came from? Well, the custom of using Christmas wreaths can be traced back to a belief that the crown of thorns placed on the head of Christ when he was crucified, that original crown of thorns was made from the holly, so that when the holly wreaths were hung, it was a reminder of Christ's great sacrifice. Gives it an all-new meaning, doesn't it? But one thing for sure, Christmas is a time of great celebration, of wonderful feasting, and of hope. But hope for what? And where does our hope, where should our hope come from? I'm taking a break now, but when we return, I'll tell you a strange story of a man who wrote a famous poem but refused to admit his authorship of that poem. You'll also hear the story of one very fast runner who refused to run on Sundays. I'm Jerry Stewart. I'll be back with more of this special Christmas program after these messages. If you're enjoying this special holiday program today and you'd like to know how to get your own copy, you can visit my website at www.jerrystewartusa.com. All of the information is right there. Or you can call our office at 817-995-6965 and someone will answer to help you. Or you may be thinking about getting today's order packet as a Christmas present for that special patriotic someone. And I can tell you that these programs do make great gifts. So if you'd like to know more about our work and to read some great stories, just go to my website at jerrystewartusa.com, and there are hundreds of great true stories of America right there, and they are all free for you to read and enjoy. Once again, thanks so much for listening, for supporting my programs, and thanks for being a great American. Now, enjoy the rest of the show, and God bless you. Are you like one recent listener? You've been listening to my programs now for years, and you think it would be great to hear my patriotic messages in person? I'll tell you just what I told him. You call, you invite, I'll come. Contact my office now at 817-995-6965 or go to jerrystewartusa.com and send me an email. I would love the opportunity to come to your city, your local meeting hall or auditorium, your football field, your school, your church. I would love to tell you what is on my heart for our nation, America. So, a simple phone call or email costs nothing. Let's talk to see if we might be able to put something together in your town. That contact number again is 817-995-6965. Remember, the future of our America is not up to anyone else. It's up to you and me. God bless you.
Trucker Randy here. Let's face it, we're all getting older, but we don't have to feel the pains of getting older. Most people and even our pets have daily pain. Don't let pain slow you down. Get natural relief with CBD products from Patriots Relief. Designed by nature and trusted by millions, CBD synergistically works with your body to naturally relieve pain along with many other benefits. CBD is not marijuana and you will not get high. Vicky and I trust Patriots Relief products because they truly work. Go to their website, patriotsrelief.com, then call Tim and his family at 877-230-1776. Mention the promo code TR1 to get the biggest discounts. Again, call 877-230-1776 and mention TR1. Patriotsrelief.com.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
The Sioux Animal Hospital in Sault Ste. Marie has been in the same location for 35 years. The owner, Dr. Jeff, specializes in providing all aspects of care for your animals. From annual shots to complicated bone and soft tissue surgeries, Dr. Jeff can take care of any animal. So call him today at 906-635-5910. From dogs and cats to cows and horses, Dr. Jeff loves them all. So give him a call at 906-635-5910.
Hey everybody, it's Trucker Randy, the Yo-Yo Diet King. I have literally lost hundreds of pounds in my life. Slim Fast in the 90s, Nutrisystem in 2000, South Beach, Superfoods, they all worked in the short term, only to gain it all back plus some. Now that I'm 65, I really wanted to find a program that would increase my metabolism to burn my belly fat, bring my hormones back to my younger days without any exercising. Then I met Missy of MyPure Health Solutions. She explained how her program does exactly what I was looking for. Go to TruckerRandyHealth.com. Follow my journey with Missy and see that I dropped 22 pounds of body fat in the first 14 days without exercising and eating real foods. Again, go to TruckerRandyHealth.com and schedule a free consultation or call Missy at 269-964-4044. Let Missy change your metabolism just like she's changed mine. Do it today.
Hello and welcome back to this special Christmas program. I'm Jerry Stewart. It was Christmas Eve, 1822, and in the Moore house it was anything but a joyful Christmas Eve. A six-year-old girl, her name was Charity, lay in her bed, deathly sick with tuberculosis. As she lay there, deathly sick, Charity had but one request, to hear a new story from her father for Christmas. Her father was a great one for stories, and she always loved to hear a new one. So, on that Christmas Eve, 1822, her father, Clement Moore, sought to compose for his daughter a new Christmas story in the form of a poem. But just what should he write about? He wanted the story to be one that would bring joy to his little girl. And then he remembered that during a recent trip to his town, he had heard a local woodcutter telling some children a story about a man in Denmark named Saint Nicholas. So this inspired Clement Moore to write a story he called A Visit from St. Nicholas. He worked frantically through the night to finish the story, and when he finished, he rushed to tell the story to his sick daughter. And to his great pleasure, she loved the story. It started like this. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Sound familiar? Of course it does. It's perhaps the most popular Christmas poem in the world, which has been listened to and enjoyed by hundreds of millions of children for almost 200 years, including us. But there's something different. It's the poem's title. We don't know this poem by the title, A Visit from St. Nicholas. The poem title is 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. But there's a very interesting story behind this poem. After Clement Moore's daughter recovered from her sickness, all of Moore's family greatly urged him to write the poem down and send it in for publication. But Moore refused. So, in 1823, a cousin of his secretly wrote down the poem and sent it anonymously to a newspaper, hoping that if the newspaper published the poem, then Clement Moore would be forced to take credit as the author. Well, as you can only imagine, the newspaper publishers loved the poem, and they published the poem in their paper that Christmas, 1823. And the public responded with such an overwhelming love for the poem that for the next 25 years, faithfully every year, the newspaper published the poem, and it spread all around the world. But its author was never known. But did he ever divulge the fact that he was the author? No. Even though that poem was published around the world, he never took credit. And get this, he never received a dime's pay for his masterpiece. And the world never knew the poem's author until he died. But you say, just why did Clement Moore not want his authorship of this beloved poem to be revealed? Well, here's the reason. Clement Moore was a renowned scholar and professor at Columbia University. He was a brilliant man, but he wanted to be known for his academic excellence, not a simple children's poem. Amazing. And isn't it a strange and interesting twist of fate that today no one really knows Clement Moore for his excellent work in the study of ancient languages, but instead he is remembered by everyone for a simple Christmas poem he wrote for his sick and ailing child. Very strange, the twists and turns of life. And speaking of strange twists, listen to this story. It was in 1981 when a movie came to the screen about a man none of us had ever heard of. The name of the movie was Chariots of Fire. It was about a man, Eric Little, and what happened at the 1924 Summer Olympics in which he competed. But actually, the power of Eric Little's story was not so much about what he did on the track, but more about how he conducted himself in his daily walk. Eric was born in 1902 in China to a missionary couple serving there in China. And after spending part of his youth in China, his parents sent him and his brother back to England to attend school. And Eric immediately became recognized as an excellent athlete, and even more importantly, as an excellent person. In his teen years, Eric began running track and soon became known as the fastest runner in Scotland. And since no one from Scotland had ever won an Olympic gold medal, the people of Scotland grew ever so hopeful. But it didn't seem to bother or concern Eric. He just liked to run. Well, in the summer of 1924, he did make the Olympic tryouts, and he went to Paris representing Scotland. But there was one big problem. Eric was a Christian, and he strongly believed that God did not want him to run on Sundays. So, when he found out that his best chance to win the 100-meter race was on a Sunday, he realized that he could not run, and his mind could not be changed. So, to the disappointment of so many, Eric Little withdrew from the race. But he had one other chance, the 400-meter race. It was not his best event, and no one expected him to win. But as he prepared to start the race, he was handed a note. Eric read the note and clutched it tightly in his hands. He ran the entire race with that note, and unbelievably, he won the race and set a new world record. What did the note say? It was a Bible scripture, 1 Samuel 2:30, a promise from God. It said, "Those who honor me, I will honor." Eric had honored God with his difficult stand to not run on Sunday, and God honored him. Wow, what a story. But that's not where the story ends. Eric went on to run many more important races. For some time, he was known as the fastest man in the world. But amazingly, his heart was not in his own fame or glory. His heart was in the hope of Christ. So Eric Little gave up all of that, and he returned to China in 1925 and served there as a missionary until 1943. And in 1941, as the Japanese fought to take that country of China over, life became so dangerous that all missionaries were encouraged to leave. But Eric Little stayed to continue in his gospel work. But times became so hard there, with so much death and suffering, some would wonder how he could stay. But the same courage and determination and steadfastness he had shown at the Olympics that year in 1924 helped Eric hold up to all that came, and his light did shine. He finally ended up in a Japanese internment camp, but he continued his work of hope. This brutal prison camp came to be known as the Courtyard of the Happy Way, and those who came to know Eric were amazed. Well, sadly, in 1945, at only age 43, Eric Little, while still in that Japanese internment camp, was discovered to have an inoperable brain tumor. And that, together with his overwork and malnutrition, caused him to die on February the 21st, 1945. When Eric died, one fellow intern said the entire camp was stunned for days. So great was the vacuum that Eric's death had left. You know, on rare and special occasions, we come across someone, a special someone, whose life and walk are so powerful, they give us hope. I'm taking a break now, but when I return, you'll hear the story of one man. His name is William, a man with the mind of a young child, but perhaps the most